All right, praise the Lord. Just after the service now, there will be a meeting of the teenagers that will be coordinating the camp out this Saturday, or this weekend, over here by the organ. So all those participating in the camp out this weekend, please meet right over here by the organ. And Brother Joel Corver had an announcement to make. Boy, listen, I'll tell you, they've really done a lot of work in my absence. That was really, really interesting, the way we timed that, where they'd be done in my absence. I'd really appreciate that. But at any rate, they've enlarged the office. I've been very cramped in there for a long time. I've had books piled up in my closet and piled up on top of each other and everything for a long time. And they moved a couple of walls and really made the office larger. And they've just done so much good work over there. I can tell that many, many hours have gone into what I see already. And so that's tomorrow night. You need some help? Okay, if anyone can help see Brother Joel. Anybody know that they might have a couple of hours available tomorrow evening? Could help out there. Okay, Brother Irving, anyone else? Some carpet and suspended seating. Here's a couple of men, Scott and Jeff. Okay, there's three fellows right there. Really appreciate that, man, and appreciate what's being done. That's really going to help when we get that finished over there. I told Brother Joel today, I said, as we keep going through our building program and thinking about moving along at the Lord's pace, this office renovation is really going to make me a patient preacher. While we wait to build those buildings, because it's taken a lot of pressure off me over there. That's a big help. Turn to Acts 14, if you would, and let's read just a few verses. I want to just read some verses to sort of set the tone a little bit. I may have read these in the past when I've done very much the same thing that I'm going to do tonight. But I want to just report to you basically about what the Lord did on our trip and some of the great things that God is doing in Puerto Rico, especially through Brother Dave Rackey. Dave Rackey is probably one of the greatest men that I know. I mean, when we get to heaven, God's keeping the records, I know. But, you know, there are an awful lot of people getting an awful lot of recognition, an awful lot of credit about things. And then there are an awful lot of other folks that are quietly doing their job for God that are getting far more done than anyone on earth knows. He's one of those men. What a job he's doing for the Lord. My, what a testimony. I just really appreciate him and his family so much. But I want to report some of these things to you. And it says here, in verse 23, near the end of the chapter here. And when they had ordained them elders in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed. And after they had passed throughout Pisidia, they came to Pamphylia. And when they had preached the word in Perga, they went down into Attaliah and thence sailed to Antioch, from whence they had been recommended to the grace of God for the work which they fulfilled. And when they were come and had gathered the church together, they rehearsed all that God had done with them, and how he had opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles. And there they abode long time with the disciples. All right, so what I want to do this evening is very much the same thing here. We have gone out, we have preached in some churches, we have ordained a couple of men, we have gotten a few things organized and really harvested some fruit that others have planted and watered, and now I'm here to tell you what your part has been in that. Last Tuesday, the day we were getting ready to go on our mission trip to Puerto Rico, was a very busy day. We were getting ready to start the work on the office that night and had a number of visits that we needed to make and took one of the church interns, and we got finished with our visitation about 10 o'clock that night. And, you know, sometimes you get hindered. Sometimes things don't always work out the way you want them to. Sometimes folks will say, duties don't conflict. And I know what that means, but I also know how that works, okay? And the simple truth of the matter is, God does have one thing that you're supposed to be doing, and it's your problem to figure out what that is, okay? Because there's several things that you need to be doing at one time. When I got home that night, I got a call from Brother Jeff Gaines. There was a problem with Thursday and Friday's radio broadcast. I had that all set up and done for the rest of the last week and all this week, and so I had to go over to the radio station late that night and redo those 2 days' broadcast. And the time we got finished with all that, it was well after midnight. But nevertheless, we were able to get up and get packed and catch our plane at 7:30 the next morning. And we flew to Atlanta, where we waited for 3 hours. We could have probably driven to Atlanta. But we got in Atlanta, got a number of things caught up. And, you know, God gives us an opportunity to see some things and just have some influence with some folks there. And we carried a lot of gospel tracts with us, and we love to pass those out as we travel. Tremendous opportunities to spread the word when you're traveling. And I hope that you get in the habit of doing that. I used to carry them up here in my shirt pocket. And frankly, when I kept them in my shirt pocket, they'd get wrinkled, and I would perspire, and they would look awful, and then I wouldn't want to pass them out. Well, now I keep my gospel tracts in my wallet over here. And I try to keep 4 or 5 of each kind in here, both the Bill Mayer tract and the Becky tract. And then when I see that I'm running low, I always have a bunch more in my briefcase. But you ought to carry gospel tracts with you. You know that? carry them with you whenever you can. And if you work and you're in an environment where it's not convenient for you to carry them, keep them in your car. Or, you know, maybe you can get some way to keep them in your wallet or something, or even fold one and keep it in your wallet. But keep some with you. But I usually keep a few right back here and then take these out. And that way, you know, they're really interested because I guess they think I'm going to give them some money or something. But no, I take my tract, give them a gospel tract and tell them a little bit about that. And you can always keep a few there. If you carry a wallet like this, it's ideal to keep tracts in. A hip wallet is not quite as convenient, but always carry some tracts with you. That's what we try to do when we travel. One of the reasons we wrote this tract. So at any rate, we were just salting the place down, you know, the airport and different places with those. And then we got on the flight, which was, of course, an international flight. And the Lord is really blessing. I mentioned to you how we worked out this deal when we went to Kansas City about the free ticket that we got. Now, my wife and I both have a free airline ticket, round trip anywhere Eastern flies in the States or the Caribbean as a result of another trip that we took in June of this year. Well, because of some of this travel and going around to see other people, pretty soon we're going to have another opportunity to take another free trip, and they'll all have to be used within a short period of time, maybe a year. I really believe the Lord is enabling us to make some contact with missionaries and others in the Lord's work. And so you pray with us about that, because this trip to Puerto Rico, had we gone when we were originally supposed to, back in May, I guess it was, we wouldn't have gotten credit. But because we flew this time, it qualifies us to get triple frequent flyer points for the entire year. And we've done a lot of travel this year. So I believe when that comes through, I will have enough of those points just on my own to get two free round-trip tickets anywhere Eastern flies, and possibly even two overseas trips paid for. And the only thing we're going to use those for is missionaries and to be an encouragement to them. And so pray with us about that. So the Lord's timing is in this. And again, if we had gone earlier, it would have been much hotter even than it was this time, although it was very, very hot. So it took us about 3 hours to get to San Juan, and when we got down there, of course, it was very hot, way up in the 90s, unseasonably hot for this kind of year, this time of year. And Brother Racky was there to meet us. And there aren't any customs or anything that you have to go through in Puerto Rico. When you're coming back, if you bring fruit or things like that, the USDA has a thing there, and they inspect it to make sure you're not bringing back certain types of fruits which are restricted. But anyway, he was there to meet us, and was the new airport open when you were there, the new Eastern Terminal? Okay, well, that's where we went. And so we were able to get through that, and then we immediately had a long drive ahead of us, about 3.5 hours it took us to get where we were going. Puerto Rico is a small island, about 35 miles in width and about 100 miles in length, positioned horizontally just southeast of Cuba, about 1,200 miles from Miami, Florida. And south, down below Florida, you have the long Cuban island there. And then next to it is the island which has Haiti on the west and the Dominican Republic on the east. Right next to that is Puerto Rico. And then all the other Lesser Antilles go down toward the South America coast. You may be familiar with that. But anyway, that's where it is. And so we drove from San Juan, which is in the center of the northern coast, straight through the island. And then we went through a town called Ponce and another city called Yauco. Is that what it is? Irving, which is where Irving's father lives. And we drove through there and around up to the western side to a city called Mayagüez. I remember you've been to Mayagüez. And they know you there, and they talked about you a lot. And I preached in the New Life Baptist Church that evening, and we spent the night there in Mayagüez. And we met the Keelan family, doing a great work for the Lord. There's another lady there named Joan Whiteheart, whom we had known when we were down in the Bahamas, who's teaching in their school there. So I preached that evening, and we gave our family's testimony, and the Lord really used it in the life of some people. And preached through a translator, a young man who's working hard there in that church and is just really on fire for the Lord. And after the service was over, the emphasis that we gave in our testimony that night was that if Becky, through her little tract, could reach so many people for the Lord with her limitations, what could we do with what God has given us? And evidently that was... Now, I usually don't present the testimony in that way. I usually present it in some other ways. But that was the impression that God gave me that night. And when it was all over, the pastor, the missionary pastor and the others came and said, you know, we've been talking to our people about the importance of being soul winners and the importance of reaching their neighbors. And what a blessing it was to have that emphasis. And they felt like that was really going to be a turning point in their church. And I didn't realize the timing of it and the way it worked out. Well, we gave one of the tracts to all the folks who were there that evening, and there was a man named Dr. P. Ferrer. He was of Cuban origin and has been trained in the States. He has a PhD from the University of Florida, teaches marine biology at the University of Puerto Rico there in Mayagüez. Brilliant man. He came up, and hermano, he said, you know, I can't pronounce all these Spanish words now, but anyway, brother, he said, this should be in Spanish. And I said, well, yeah, you're probably right. And he said, I will translate it. He said, I will start tomorrow morning. And so he's going to translate it. Now, you know, there have been a number of other attempts that we've made to have the tract translated, but they've always fallen through for one reason or another, usually because they were being translated by people who were Americans who had learned Spanish. But now here's a man who is fluent in both languages and is a PhD teacher, you know, in both languages, and just a brilliant man. So he's going to put the tract in Spanish for us. And boy, before the week was out, I realized why we needed to do that. When we travel, we meet a lot of Japanese businessmen and a lot of Japanese people in American airports now. They own much of America, I think, is the reason. But anyway, they are over here, you know, watching after their investment. So we meet a lot of them. And I was really thankful when the Japanese missionary translated our tract into Japanese. But you know, there's a little drawback there when you share that with the Japanese. The Japanese people don't have the same attitude that we do about handicapped people. They look down on handicapped people. Anybody who has something physically wrong with them, they snub their noses at them. And their concept, the old samurai concept of perfection and manliness and all that kind of thing, that hinders their understanding a little bit. And even though they may feel the compassion, they don't express it as much. And so if you hand them a tract of the picture of a handicapped person, they might not take it. But the Latin people are a little more compassionate, very gracious people, and the tract was very effective among them. And so you pray with us about that as we get that tract printed in Spanish. Well, the next morning we got up and I preached in the chapel of the Baptist Academy, which meets there at the New Life Baptist Church. Now this is one of the places where Bernie has built two pulpits, and they were talking about that the pulpits are there, and that they came while we were there. And they've been there for a while. They've been up in San Juan waiting on some paperwork is what they've been. But at any rate, they were able to get those. And the pulpit that they are using there in the church in Mayagüez has termites. It's a little speaker stand, and the bottom of it is eaten with termites, and it's real shaky and wobbly. And so they were really looking forward to getting this pulpit that Bernie made for them. And they were thrilled about that. But the way they build their buildings over there, and I've taken a lot of pictures, haven't got them developed yet, but I'll put them on the bulletin board when we get them finished. They build, most of their buildings are of cement. They can't build them out of wood because of the humidity and the insects. So most of their buildings are built of cement. And when they build them, they run the reinforcing steel rods right on up through the roof in case they want to put another story on. So most every building over there has a flat concrete roof with reinforcing rods sticking out of it everywhere. And many of them, they've gone ahead and built another floor on them. And so this particular church building, they've done that three times. And the room that we were on was on the fourth level up there. It's a big old tall building up there. And the Lord is really using it. A vibrant bunch of believers just love the Lord. And they were so excited. Remember when you first got saved? And remember when you first started going to church? And you sang and you were so excited, especially if you were saved as an adult. Remember that? That's the way the believers are there in Puerto Rico. Oh, they're just so excited about being saved, and they're just so hungry for the things of God. And you know, when you preach through an interpreter, you have to be careful. You have to be simple. You have to be clear-cut. You can't get into abstractions. And you have to be careful about, you know, some jokes just don't work at all. Now, I knew that ahead of time, and I avoided that problem because I learned that the hard way in the Bahamas. But they have a lot of things over there that we would never understand here. For example, Irving knows what a bobo is. Okay, a bobo is either a dummy, a dumb person. It's also a baby's pacifier. Okay, and so they have these ads about drugs up all over the place over there. They have one, a picture of a chimpanzee with a pacifier in his mouth. And basically what the sign says is that bobos are for bobos, you know, and they're saying that, you know, only dummies use drugs. Well, that would never work in English. You know, you could never understand that because we don't use that term. And there are a lot of things that we would use in English that would make no sense at all to them. And, you know, your alliterated outlines, forget them. You know, you know, here's your alliterated points, you know, and all that. Just or a poem or anything like that. No, forget it. It just doesn't come through. And so, you know, you have to really make it simple. and clear, and then depend on the person that that's translating for you. Brother Racky interpreted for me most of the time that I was there, except during the Sunday school hour. He had interpreted for my wife, who was speaking to the ladies until someone else came in, and another man. And I would make my statement, and then he would go on and on and on, and I recognized a few words. You know what I'm talking about. He gave a few words that and I thought, I didn't say that. I know what that word means. Well, so what I thought, he was really embellishing what I was saying. You know, now he was preaching the truth, and it was real good. But at times I thought, well, maybe I should just let him teach. You know, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. He was a great fellow, really loved the Lord. Well, anyway, after we were there in Mayaguez for a while, I realized then the serious mistake that we had made in the way that we had packed. You know, I wear these long-sleeve shirts most of the time, and I took 7 of these with me. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. The one I wore and the other one that I wore until I could go buy something else. Okay, that's all I wore. And we bought the Guy Abera shirt, you know, that had 2 of those, and we washed them out and wore that the whole time. Otherwise, I think I would have probably suffocated. So hot. And every day it rained. And every day, somehow, we managed to be out in the rain. And so every day we got rained on. And, you know, I thought about that rash statement that I've made before about how, you know, people shouldn't change their hairstyle, you know. I mean, they should. Well, I had to change my hairstyle. I just gave up on it. I just, you know, whatever it looked like when I combed it, that's the way it looked. Because after you get rained on every day and it's so humid, you know, I went with a bird's nest style hairdo. Most of the time I was down there. Because the humidity just kinked my hair right up. But at any rate, those were just some of the little inconveniences. But you know, there are a lot of other inconveniences. Traffic. It's amazing. You know, some things upset Americans that don't upset other people. The Puerto Rican people don't get upset about traffic. They just do what they have to do. And I think everybody understands that. All of the police drive all of the time with their blue lights flashing. And I asked Dave, I said, how does somebody know when they're trying to pull somebody over? He said, well, they really don't ever pull anybody over. They just sort of, you know, it's kind of let them know that you're out there, you know, kind of thing if you need them. But we saw a lot of police, but they all had their blue lights on, just cruising down the road. People driving on the median and driving over on the shoulder. But, you know, it really helped during rush hour because there's so much traffic. Everybody was just sort of looking out for each other and for themselves. If somebody cuts you off in traffic, nobody gets angry about that. You know, and blowing the horn. In America, people blow their car horns for 2 reasons. Now, that's true. One is because of danger, and they have to warn people. And the other thing is they cuss with it. Have you noticed that? They can't cuss loud enough, so they cuss with their horn. That's right. But they don't do that in Puerto Rico. Down there, they just, you know, beep, come on, let's go, come on, let's go. You know, that kind of thing. And nobody seems to get angry. And, you know, cut people off in traffic and people driving on the median. And if people come around you, you know, just get out of the way and just go on. Nobody seems to get upset about it. And I asked Dave, I said, doesn't this make people mad? I said, if an American came down here and tried to drive, well, he'd get so enraged. Or if one of these people went to America and did this, you know, it would ruin their whole day. He said, no, it just doesn't bother them down here too much. And it really doesn't. Now, other things bother them. For example, all the ladies will hug each other and kiss each other on the cheek. And if you don't, now, the men don't do that. But like an older man and a younger man might embrace. But not the men and the women don't do that. Unless it was be a very elderly lady or a young boy, they might, but not among equals. But they say that if a lady comes in and does not kiss another lady on the cheek, they get offended about that. And so, you know, it's a different culture altogether. And you have to be sensitive to those kinds of things. But anyway, we drove the 3.5 hours, went over to Mayaguez, had that ministry there. And then the next day, Brother Racky came down, and we were able to go and do a little sightseeing while he and the other brother went and took care of all this paperwork to get the pulpits out. And they didn't want to let them do it. They wanted them to go back up to San Juan and take care of it. And they thought, no, because evidently this just red tape is unbelievable. And the record down there is that whenever you have to do anything that involves the government, you plan the whole day. And just take all day to get it done. And they were able to get it done in about 1.5 or 2 hours. And that itself was a miracle. And they testified of that miracle. So we were able to see a number of things there. And Puerto Rico is, of course, an American protectorate. And there are a lot of things down there that are like America, but it is a different country too, a different culture altogether. On Sunday night, I was talking with a man who is of Lebanese background, who was born in Cuba. His name is Abish Diego. And Brother Diego, Don Diego, Mister, they call him, taught a lesson in church we attended Sunday night, was trained here in the States. He has a PhD from Georgetown in Washington. Brilliant man, writes a regular column for the Wall Street Journal. And a fine Christian man. And we were able to have a meal with him later. And he and I were talking about the difference in the American culture and the Latin cultures. And boy, he said it so succinctly and so clearly. He said, I realized, having been born and raised in Cuba and having escaped after Castro took over, I realized, he said, when I first came to the States, he went to a school in Oklahoma and then he went to Georgetown, that America is what it is because it was built on Reformation theology. It is a Protestant nation, and it was built on Protestant theology, whereas the Latin countries in Central and South America are based on Rome. And their backwardness and their susceptibility to communism, he said, are based on their roots in Rome. You think about that for a few minutes. In other words, in the Roman church, it basically teaches people, don't worry about yourself so much, just give of yourself and trust us, and maybe eventually you'll get something out of it. Isn't that basically what communism says? Same basic philosophy. And he talked about the potential of his own country, Cuba, and how now that communism has come in, it has thoroughly discredited the Roman church. And the people have just discarded it. The Roman church has virtually no influence at all in Cuba anymore. And communism has been there long enough now to where it has become discredited. And so the people are just surviving and waiting, and they're open for whatever. And he said it could be that some true believers could get something started like has now occurred in China among the underground church, or maybe in Russia. Russian communism having come to its maturity and having been shown to its own people to be bankrupt, has now become a fertile seedbed for the underground church. And he thinks that something like that may happen in Cuba. It was a very interesting observation. Brilliant man. And I really enjoyed talking with him. Well, nonetheless, on Thursday, we went on up to Las Marias, and we drove all the way up there in the rain. And it rains a lot over there. It's very tropical, very hot, everything's green. And we got to experience the fall all over again when we came home because we'd been in a summer climate. Really, more even than the summer would be here, because it's a jungle. It literally is a jungle. And it just vines and creepers and bananas and fruit trees everywhere, fruit going to waste. There's just more fruit than anybody knows what to do with. Well, that was Thursday. When we got up there, we prepared for the service that evening. And that's when we began to see what God is doing at the Christ the King Baptist Church in Las Marias, there in the building. Now, we have had two other groups go down. Pastor Graham and Bernie and Steve Roberts all went down. Been about a year and a few months ago, 14, 15 months ago, something like that. And the Lord worked in that. You may recall the testimony they gave. They was moving up from Mayagüez to Las Marias and did not find the house that they were going to live in and meet in until the day before the men got there. And it's perfect, just perfect for what they need. It has a big carport area in the back that our men fixed up into a meeting room. And they built a little backdrop for them, put a wall on it and an entrance and so on. And it's just ideally suited for their church building. And they have about 30 or 40 regular attenders with high attendance of maybe 50 or even more. And so it's just ideally suited for that. Did they have the drinking fountain installed? They put a drinking fountain just outside now. Oh, okay. Yeah, they've got the drinking fountain installed and just all through there, the evidence of the work, and all the people, they asked about you, and they wanted to know about that, and they enjoyed your being there so much. And then about the teenagers, last May or the early part of June, we had a teen group, and then, of course, the Bergmans and the Lunas and Steve Thomas and Scott Moore and Pastor Dixon and his wife went down and spent about 10 days down there, and they held Bible clubs, and they built a two camp cabins, and did some other things. And on Thursday night, when I came up there, this fellow came up to me, and he shook my hand. He said, "Hablo español." And I said, "No, I'm sorry, I really don't. I wanted to say, poquito, but I couldn't even do that, but, a little bit. But I thought I'd better be honest about it, because he might talk to me in Spanish, and then I'd get caught. But at any rate, I said, "No, I'm sorry, I really don't." And he said, "I speak some English." And I said, "Well, great." He said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Greenville." "Oh, Greensville," he said. And he says, "You know Pastor Dixon?" And I said, "Yes, I know Pastor." "Oh, Pastor Dixon, he's my friend," he said like that. And I said, "Well, what's your name?" He said, "My name is Victor." You remember Victor? Victor was the fellow that Pastor Dixon told us about, who helped to build the bathhouse out where they built the two cabins. He was not saved when the teens were there. He was saved the next month. He has been baptized and now in the church. What a blessing. There he was. What a blessing that was. Remember the young lady named Yamilet? And we prayed for Yamilet's stepfather and some of our teens that may have even stayed in their home. I'm not sure. But there was a fellow who came. He came up to me and he says, I speak pretty good English. And I said, yeah, you really do. And he said, yeah. He says, I drive a taxi in New York. I said, well, they don't speak English up there. And so he laughed about that. But he'd been up in New York for 20 some odd years. He has been saved since the teen group was there. And several others. And that night I met him. He was back there. And I got a picture of him showing his wife a picture of his baptism. It was on the bulletin board there. And he had been saved for about a month. And he played two specials on his harmonica while we were there. And sang a special. What a blessing just to see the zeal and the excitement that these people have. Oh my. And just to see the fruit that's being born there. And folks, what this is it's just New Testament Christianity. It's missions. It's what this whole thing is about. It's what we're spending our money on when we send our money to the missionaries. And here's a fellow who was teaching in a school in the Bahamas that God burdened to go and start a church in Puerto Rico. And he went there to a town where there was not a church, and now there is a church, and it's filled with believers just like us who are probably more, there's no probably about it, they are, more excited than we are about seeing other people saved. They believe the same things we do. Our hearts were knit together. There were tears when we left. I mean, it was just amazing to see what God has done. And I thought to myself, you know, listen, everybody needs an opportunity once in a while to see that, to know just how true this book is. When we gave the examination of those two deacons on Saturday, I'm telling you, they were ready. They were ready. We asked them a number of questions. And I mean, the same kind of thing that we would talk to our deacons about here, really the kinds of questions that we would ask a young man when we ordain him into the ministry. And these fellows took those Spanish Bibles and gave us Bible answers. And they both of them have been saved for 3 years. They knew their Bibles well. They were well-versed and ready. Boy, I was impressed. And I just thought about the fact that here Dave has taken his time and poured his life into those men. And he told me later, he said, they like to sing the same songs. And I said, yeah, I noticed that, Dave. I said, but that's okay. I said, they sing them like they really mean them. And he said, yeah, I think they do. And he says, I think it's important for them to pick the songs as long as they're good songs and gospel songs. I think they ought to sing what they want to sing. And he said, let them take leadership. And he is allowing them to have leadership there and working with them. So that Thursday night, we had the meeting. Then on Friday, we drove out and we saw the camp. And that the two buildings that the teens built, and they look fine. The road needs a lot of work there. We need to really pray for them about that. That down the little bridge, there's all washing out. Well, that'd be excellent if they can get that done. But they say they're going to cut another road, but that road that goes out there, we had to get out of the car in order for the car even to get up the hill. But it was an unseasonable amount of rain this time of year. But at any rate, we saw the camp there, and they've got the sign out. I guess they may have had that when you all were there, Bethel Baptist Camp. And just some great things that the Lord did there. Dr. Harris was telling me about someone that he met who had gone on a summer mission to work in a camp, and it was in that camp. It's amazing the context that God works out. I met a fellow in San Juan who had a friend who bought a car from somebody here in the States. And he was riding along with them in that car. And the person said, when I bought this car, it had this tape in the tape player. It was Pastor Batory preaching in Spanish. Isn't that something? And it was in the tape player when they bought the car. And this person didn't have any idea who it was. And just amazing, you know, the connections, the way things work out. And we're just so thankful that God has allowed us to see some of these things coming together. But and then later, it was Brother Pettis, your dad, Jeannie, that led this fellow to the Lord. And that had the car. Well, at any rate, we were able to preach there again then on Friday night. And then on Saturday was a work day. We had a lot of work to do. The building that they wanted to have the meeting in to have the ordination was tied up with a political thing. You heard our teens mention that they had all this politics going on. Well, that was the primaries. Next week is the election. Now, folks, politics in Puerto Rico is like Clemson, Carolina in South Carolina. I mean, those people get excited about it. They go around with these mega. I never saw anything like that in my life. They got pickup trucks with speakers 6 and 8 feet up in the air going in every direction. The houses vibrate when these things come by. You kids know what I'm talking about? I mean, I go to sleep tonight, you know, hearing, Bota por Rubén. You know, I mean, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, just here they go, you know. And I asked Krista Racky, I said, what did that one say? She says, we're better with Raphael. Okay, you know, she they can speak the language very well. And then another time I was coming by, what did that one say? She says, that one says, vote for Reuben. And so that's these little songs and the kind of Jamaican steel drum band type music that they have. And after a while, it just gets into your subconscious. And you lay there at night trying to get to sleep, hearing this stuff going over. And that's exactly why they do it, I think, you know, because they really get excited about it. On Sunday, when we drove back to San Juan, they'd had a big rally there in town. Thousands, tens of thousands of people from all over the island had gone to be there for this rally. And there are basically three parties. One party which wants the same relationship with the states they have now. Another which wants statehood. And then another which is splintered off one of those that wants to be totally independent of the states. So there's a big rivalry. Here are all these tens of thousands of people coming, and the party in power abuses that power sometimes. I tend to think maybe, Irving, that might be right, because all of the school buses from the island were used to bring people to this rally. That was the party in power. Now, that would never happen in America, I don't think. But they did that. And so here's this caravan, probably 40 to 50 miles long of people, and hanging out the windows and waving their flags and screaming and hollering. And for that entire distance, the opposition along the street, putting their thumbs down and yelling back, you know, and hollering at people. It was unbelievable. Acting like a bunch of high school students going to the big game. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And by the way, you don't make a lot of jokes about it while you're down there. But at any rate, I did find a couple people that were sympathetic, and I broached the subject very carefully. I said, boy, I said, politics is really something down here. He says, yeah, these people are crazy. he was a Puerto Rican. But at any rate, that was a big thing. Well, as a result of that, we weren't able to use the building. Now, again, that could have been a source of irritation because the building that we had to use was absolutely filthy. We had to clean mud out with shovels and get the hose out and get this place cleaned up and go in with bleach to clean the restrooms and everything. And it took us about 3 or 4 hours to clean the building up to get ready for the meeting that evening. It was a community center. And we had to go in and wait for the karate class to get finished before we could go in and use it. And then all these tables and lizards and things, I mean, just everywhere. And I mean, really. And we finally got all that stuff out and got the building cleaned up, and the young girls came in and they put up crepe paper and they got all things fixed up. These two men that were ordained had gone out and bought new suits. And the one fellow, bless his heart, and I don't mean to put him down. Please don't misunderstand. I'm just saying, I want you to understand the innocence. He came to the meeting that evening, and you could tell he doesn't wear a suit very much. He had both of his buttons buttoned like this, and he still had the label on his sleeve. And I came to him, and I cut the label off for him. I said, boy, you look sharp. Oh, you're looking so sharp. And he had that new suit. Man, he was excited about this. Listen, this is a big thing for him. His entire unsaved Catholic family came to that ordination. They had a great big meal. They had roast chicken and peas and rice, and we ate that several times while we were down there. but anyway, and all this vegetables and fruit, and they had a cake that was about 3.5-4 feet wide that his unsaved brother had made, and it was all decorated up. And on the front it said for the deacons on their ordination, and it said God is love. And it was like a Bible. It was just precious, you know, to see the way that people were so thrilled and excited about what God was doing. And so that afternoon, we had the examination about 2 o'clock. That lasted about an hour and a half. And then everybody gave a testimony, and then we had the meal and fellowship time. And then along about 6 o'clock, we preached again. And the song services last about an hour down there. And they love to sing. They sing a lot of psalms. And they use their guitar and harmonica and sometimes just sing a cappella. And, you know, it's just a blessing to behold. And they read a lot of poetry. And several people will get up and read a poem, and then somebody will strum the guitar in the background while they read the poem. And it's just really touching to see the way the Lord works there. And so we had the service that evening and presented the gospel, and we had a big crowd of people, a lot of visitors, a lot of Catholic people, a lot of unsaved people. One man there in the church, he's a real gracious man. His wife does not come to church with him. She goes to the Pentecostal church. And she came that evening to the service, too. And so everybody was there, and just a great time of fellowship. Then Sunday morning, of course, we had, again, services, and the Sunday school starts at 9 o'clock and goes till 10, then the service lasts a little longer in the morning. We finished a little before 12. My wife spoke to the ladies, and the Lord really, really used her. And there was a lady there who had made a ceramic thing that she wanted to send home to Becky. And so we brought it. I wish I'd brought it to show to you. It's a large hand. Like this, which is obviously to be God's hand or Jesus' hand. And then it has a little blonde-haired girl in her nightgown leaning over in that hand. There's two pieces, and one lays against the other like that. And after she heard the testimony, she wanted Becky to have that. It really touched our hearts to see the love of those people. And on Sunday morning, I preached on Paul's statement in 2 Timothy 4. I fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. I've finished my course. And I talked about the fact that I had to go back to the States, and that someday Pastor Racky would go, but that God had left them there. And oh, how God used that service. How the Lord spoke to those people that day. It was just amazing to see that someday, they don't need the Americans. They really don't. They've got the Lord. They've got the Holy Spirit. And to see the power of God in that place, God's going to raise up, I believe, from one of those two men that we ordained as deacons, a pastor for that church. I really believe it. Either of them could do it. The one fellow has the communicative skills, and the other fellow really has the tender heart. I mean, you know, and it was just something. What a blessing to see it. And these men are both married to sisters. And then there's a third man, Luigi. That's not Puerto Rican. That's Italian. Oh, okay. Well, Luigi, he's married to the third sister. He used to be a very popular singer before he was saved. And he has painted a new sign for the church. Now, it doesn't say Baptist Mission of Las Marias anymore. It says Iglesia Bautista Cristo Rey, and they've got their time of services and all that on there. And he painted the sign up for them. They're going to install that pretty soon. Beautiful sign. And I asked him, I said, well, that's very good. I said, you're a real artist. He said, yes. He says, that's all I do now. He says, in my first life, I was a singer. He said, like that. he meant before he was saved in his old life. You know, what a blessing. But, you know, these kinds of communication are such a blessing to see. But at any rate, we had to leave that day. And then Edgardo preached that night. And he was one of the deacons. And so we packed up and took off for San Juan. And Heidi and the girls were not able to go with us, a long trip. Of course, she's schooling them at home. We had a great visit with them. And you may know that Heidi is expecting a baby in December, and we need to pray for them, and as she still will have her responsibilities there with schooling. But they're just doing very well, and just so excited to see the way the Lord's using all of the family in their ministry. And it was so much fun. People hung around for half hour, 45 minutes after the service was over, and to see the little children playing. Here was little Angie and Krista and all of them, and even Beth was with the older girls, but the two little girls especially, and with their little playmates, and they were playing a game, and they were speaking in Spanish. You know, you don't have to teach children language. They just pick it up from their playmates, and they can communicate so well in the language. You recall when the little Boffman girl came home, Debbie Boffman. She couldn't speak English anymore. She had been over there 4 years. She came home speaking French. And so it was just a blessing to see that. And my wife and I are committed. I have been preaching to Spanish congregations now for 7 or 8 years through an interpreter. And I understand enough Spanish to be able to know if somebody's talking about me, okay, or if somebody's talking to me, or generally what they're talking about. I listened to one sermon while I was down there that was not interpreted for me, and I was able to understand exactly what he was talking about. I can't communicate it. I can't speak it enough. I can read it a little bit. But we are committed. I really believe the Lord would have us to learn the language. I really believe He would. And so, you know, we have come to the place where we've decided that's what we're going to do. Now, in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll be working on that. And I think that God's going to help us there. If He's going to give us some opportunities to go to these places, I think it would be good for us to try to be able to communicate with these people a little bit better. Two things that you need to do if you ever have an opportunity to go to the mission field. Try to be able to communicate with them as much as possible, and eat their food. Okay, eat their food if you possibly can. Okay, because that really communicates with them so well. It helps. Now, you don't buy it on the street always, but you know, if you go to somebody's home, you eat that, and whatever it is, you just eat it. Okay, and you'll find. I mean, I learned that in the military. I can eat just about anything that any other human being can eat, and that really does give you a rapport with people if you'll do that, and you might even learn to like it. And I ate some strange things this time, and I enjoyed them. I really did. Fried plantains. It's like a fried banana. It's good. It's delicious. And I found out that an avocado is much better if you put lemon juice on it. So if you ever have to eat one of those, try to get you some lemon. Okay? And that helped. But they eat a lot of that. But very good. Well, at any rate, on Sunday night, Brother Irving, I'll share a little of what we did there. Brother Irving, of course, has been in contact with a fellow there in San Juan named Max Gorman, who has had a church going for a number of years, but he's not a pastor, he's a businessman. And so we were to look him up, and I wanted to get acquainted with him a little bit so I could talk more with Irving about that opportunity down there. You may know that Jeannie's parents live in San Juan. And so we were able to spend Sunday evening there at the Metropolitan Baptist Church and have the fellowship with those folks. And then we went out to eat with them later. That's where we met Abish Diego and Brother Gorman and had a great time of talking. And we solved all the political problems of America and Puerto Rico and most of the Western Hemisphere over more roast chicken and rice that evening. And we worked it out. We both came to the conclusion that Americans always send a conservative to the White House to make sure there will be something there for their liberal congressman to get for them. I mean, that's our political philosophy, and we both agreed on that. But at any rate, we had a great time there and talked about a lot of things. And Diego, what a blessing he was. But the Gorman and I, we were out waxing elephants on politics and trying to wonder, you know, how we had gotten ourselves into this situation. And how could these things be? And it was a real rebuke to both of us when Diego said, "It's the influence of the devil." And he brought us right back to spiritual things. And we thought, yeah, that's right. And it was such a blessing to have that fellowship with them. Monday, we did some sightseeing, and we tried to make contact with a few people. We went over and had a meal with Brother Racky's sister, who is married to a man from Honduras. And they work with child evangelism all over Puerto Rico, as Dave's father does, all over the islands. And so we were able to have a meal with them, and we had a real nice Puerto Rican dish that night called lasagna. But at any rate, we had a good time with them, and we visited a couple of old forts. I'm really into that kind of stuff, you know, and a lot of my travels have pictures of old forts in them. But we saw those in old San Juan and passed out a lot of tracks. We went to a Chinese restaurant in Puerto Rico, and the Puerto Rican waiter in the Chinese restaurant spoke English and really appreciated the tract. I got a picture of me with him, which I'll show you. And these are just some of the kinds of ways that the Lord worked there for us. And then on Monday night after we had fellowship with Brother Racky's sister, back a little bit, we stayed in the condominium where Brother Racky's parents live when they're not out traveling. And so we had no expenses as far as lodging was concerned the whole time we were there. But then that Monday night we went over to see Irving and Jeannie's mother and father, Brother and Mrs. Perez, over in where's the place? Bayamon, yeah, near Bayamon, which is where Mike Casillas has his school. So we went over there, and Brother Perez, a great fella, built his house from the ground up by himself, by hand, and showed us all around. He says, "I have a little farm out back," and so we went out and he had banana trees, and he cut some bananas right off the tree, and we brought those home to the family, and pineapple. I've never tasted anything like that in my life. It's just like sugar. Oh, it's just unbelievable. You can't get a pineapple like that in America. We bought one, brought it home, and ate it all. Since we got home, it was delicious. But these were just some of the blessings. But the main blessing of the entire trip was to see the excitement of these Christians and to see the environment and the circumstances in which they live and their love for the Lord. And while we were there, just to see the connections of these things, we were talking with Jeannie's parents. And Mrs. Perez says, "I want you to talk to someone while you're here." She says, "I'm going to get him on the phone." And it's Jeannie's cousin. Is she here tonight? She's not here tonight. Maybe she'll be here Sunday. But she's here in school, and this is her first year. And, you know, that's a hard year, you know, when you're trying to figure out how to get all the grades and balance everything together. It's your first year away from home. And her dad is Jewish, Heimovitz. And he lives in San Sebastian. And so you talk about confusion. Okay, here's a Jewish fella living in Puerto Rico, speaking Spanish, and has a daughter going to Bob Jones. And he's not saved. And so I spent some time on the phone talking with him. And we're going to do what we can to be an encouragement to her. And of course, Jeannie will. And we need to pray that perhaps Mr. Heimovitz will come to the Lord as a result of his daughter being here at Bob Jones. We met another young lady who's going to come to Bob Jones next year at this meeting way back there in the mountains of Puerto Rico. And she came up and she said, "You're from Greenville." And I said, "Yes." She says, "I hope to come to Bob Jones next year." Her name is Omida. Pray for her that she'll be able to come to Bob Jones next year. Her dad wants her to come. I think Brother Perez led him to the Lord, didn't he? Yeah. And so just a tremendous contact with people there, and to see the way the Lord's working is amazing. And I want you to know that when we pray and make it possible for missionaries to go to the field, what happens is just what I've described to you tonight. Now, we told a lot about the country, and there were some neat things, and there were some other interesting things that we ate and all that kind of thing we could talk about. But the most important thing is the fact that we saw these believers over there and how they were growing and loving the Lord and being grounded in the faith and believing exactly what you and I believe. Exactly. And I asked one of the fellows, aside, not during the regular interrogation time, I said, what about baptism? What do you think about baptism? Right down the line. Just right down the line. And Bible reasons for these things. And another fellow got up and he said, what about your family? What do you believe is your responsibility to your family? And the fellow got up and said, well, he said, although I know that I'm going to be a deacon and I have a big responsibility here in the church and have a lot of work to help the pastor so the pastor can teach and preach and pray, he said, my family is my first responsibility. And I'm the priest of my home, and I must teach my family the Word of God. And here's what we're doing about devotions, and here's what we're doing about this. Boom, boom, right down the line. Boy, I was impressed by that. What a blessing to see that. And to see the way that God has used those of you who were there, to see the fruit that has come from your ministry, and to hear testimonies of kids that were saved in camp, that wouldn't have been able to go to camp if you kids hadn't gone down there and others and built those cabins. Oh, listen, folks, that's fruit. And now here's Brother Keelan and that other brother. I can't remember his name. Is it Martin? No. The Puerto Rican fellow that's with him, the translator, Manuel. The fellow, yeah, and Manuel and Brother Keelan. And now every Sunday and every Wednesday night when they step to preach their Bible and put their hands on a pulpit that Bernie built for them instead of that one that's fallen apart with termites that the guy took down there years ago. I thought about that this summer when I was up there to see in Albany, Beckwith, Brother Terry Beckwith. And he took me there to see his church. He says, you see that pulpit? And he said, yeah. He said, Bernie built that pulpit for me 10 years ago. And he's been using it all that time. And I think about, and folks, I don't think sometimes we realize the kind of influence that we have and how people appreciate. And the thing with those tapes. And when people hear, well, you know, I heard this tape, or how about this brother or that one, and asking about different ones and the prayers. And they would tell us about letters that they had received from different ones of you. And what a blessing. And as we sat there one evening to weigh in the night with the Iraqis, and they would ask about different ones. Well, how's Mrs. Forsyth now? And what about so-and-so? And are the Yorks on the mission field yet? And what about this one? And just, you know, news from home. Just anything, you know, to get the word about what God was doing. Oh, listen, you cannot imagine the admiration that I have in my heart for people who will do what the Iraqis are doing. And I sometimes think, you know, what an honor it is. And yet, on the other hand, how lonely it is at times. And I talked to Brother Keelan about that, and he said, yes, brother, he said, it gets lonely. It gets lonely to go for weeks and weeks and weeks and never speak English. And he said, it does. I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that. He said, but it's a blessing to have folks like you come and to minister to us. And you can't imagine how excited they get over someone coming from the States to take some time to show an interest in what they're doing and to preach to them and to bring something fresh to them. Sunday night, I guess, was the first time in I don't know how long when I got to hear somebody else preach. You know, it didn't occur to me very often that I preach to myself all the time. And whenever there's an opportunity to be under preaching, it's usually me preaching. But to hear somebody else, what a blessing that is. And the missionaries are the same way. To have somebody else come in and preach to them. And to have conversations with them. And to talk to them about radio messages. And about books that you're reading. And think, oh, what a refreshing experience that is. And to just, one day, when I came back from the camp, or from the place where we'd cleaned up the room, and I got back to the building, I noticed the church building was open. And I went in to lock it up because Dave wasn't coming back for about a half hour. And I went inside, and I didn't think there was anybody in there. And I said, hello. And Luigi was in there praying on the front pew. And he had been for some time, evidently. And so he raised up over the pew and he said, hola. And I saw he was praying. And I said, excuse me. He said, no, no problem. And I went and I knelt down with him and we prayed. And he prayed in Spanish. And I prayed in English. And I don't know for sure what he said, but I think I know what he said. And he probably knew a little bit about what I would say. We were just both talking to the same God. And he doesn't need an interpreter. And he was just hearing us. And I can't tell you what it's like to have the witness of the Holy Spirit from one heart to another when you can't even talk to the person. But you know that you know what's going on. Whew, what a blessing. My, I can't describe it to you. What a blessing to see the way God is working in the lives of those people. I just want you to know that my wife and I can't tell you enough how much we appreciate your making it possible to go down there. Not only that, but making it possible for us to go down there at no expense to them. And I'll leave you with this one thought. I can't tell you the emotion. I don't think you could begin to understand how this felt. When after the service was over and we were getting ready to leave on Sunday, and they had given they gave my wife a nice little scarf, the one lady did, and then they gave us a little ceramic thing for Becky. And Brother Racky came up and he handed me an envelope and he said, "Sister," and he called this lady's name, "wanted you to have this." And on the front it said, "Ofrenda de amor," love offering. And then basically for the invited pastor. I haven't even opened it. I looked at the light and I could see a $20 bill. No way can I spend that money. No way can I receive that. I'm praying that the Lord will give me some wisdom. Maybe the building fund, maybe something permanent. That's got to go into something permanent. What a sacrifice. We're talking about a week's pay here, folks, from one person. An expression of love. Can you imagine the sacrifice, the love these people have? How touching that is. Oh, my. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord for what He's doing in Puerto Rico. Praise the Lord for those of you who went. Praise the Lord for Brother Dave Racky. Just thank God for that man. Pray for him. God is using him. And Dave is a total missionary. That's just all there is to it. He is just 100% missionary. He drives around a little unair-conditioned car. And you have to do all the little tricks to be able to get the doors open, the window rolled up, and all. I mean, he's got all these little things. But he's just not interested in a lot of material things. He's just interested in serving God. And I'll tell you, you know, you invest a penny in that man, and there's a penny that'll go for God. It doesn't matter what it is. I thank God for him, and I've just really appreciated him for years. And he's really, really, really growing, and God is using him. I want you to keep praying for him. Okay.